Thank you, Michael. Hi, everyone.
Thanks,
Hi,
Michael.
Lisa.
Hi, Lisa.
Hello.
Hi, Lisa.
Hi, everyone. It is, in fact, a great honour for me to introduce our speaker this evening. It's somebody that we all love very much and is a friend to us all. But definitely for me, I should only speak for myself. Definitely for me, I've known him since my second meeting, one of those two. he's just been such an amazing kind of rock solid example of this program working in people's lives, you know, how it works if we work it. I've been really blessed to be able to do service with him in this meeting. For most of the years I've been clean, I can't actually remember. It seems like it would be, I think in September, it will be 3 years that I've been doing service with him in this meeting. And he actually started this meeting. And it's become my home group and just where I look forward to coming every Monday night. And I know that he's a big part of that. You know, he's made this a really lovely, welcoming, positive atmosphere of recovery. So I'm going to hand over to Michael, our mobster, and he's going to share with us this evening. Take it away, Michael.
Thank you, Lisa, for introducing me. I'm a grateful addict in recovery, and my name is Michael.
Hello,
Michael. Hello, Michael.
Hello. And I want to welcome each and every one of you to this meeting and congratulate. There's somebody specific I want to congratulate as well, but I'll save it until we do the birthday countdown. Anyway, to give you some context, last Monday, I celebrated 35 years in recovery and 33 years in Narcotics Anonymous. So, actually, I could say easily 35 years in recovery, Narcotics Anonymous, because my very first meeting was in Narcotics Anonymous in Sacramento, California. And it was June 4th, 1988, when I went to my very first meeting with Narcotics Anonymous. And don't ask me why I remember that date. I still don't know, but I can remember that date like it was yesterday. I remember my first meeting. I remember some of the people that were there. Actually, most of the people that were there. A few of them aren't among us anymore. But definitely the people there I remember. But I was so ashamed to be there that the only thing I could recognize was the shoes at the time. And give you context, in 1988, the top three shoes were Sperry Topsiders, Adidas, Stan Smiths, and Nike Cortezes. And if none of those names ring a bell to you, if any of those names ring a bell to you, you're definitely old. So, my clean date is different than my first meeting date. My clean date is the 19th of June of 88. And I jokingly say I didn't relapse because for the most part, to order to relapse, you have to have some semblance of recovery. And I had no recovery whatsoever when I used again. So, but that's been my clean date ever since. And, you know, part of the process of being in Narcotics Anonymous, well, let me start by saying, I came to my first meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, but I couldn't go to a lot of meetings because at the time, Sacramento was a fairly small fellowship. And so all the meetings were spread everywhere. So I didn't really have that much choice. So I went to a meeting that was around the corner for two reasons. One, it was close by. B, I was incredibly scared of the aftermath of my using because I would love to say I used a specific drug for X amount of time, But the truth was, I used everything I could get my hands on, and I was a greedy bastard. And I would try anything because it was there. I was basically a garbage can addict. Some people, the only drug I can honestly say with great certainty I never tried was heroin. And if I did try it, it wasn't in the form that most people used it, who used heroin used it as. So I really couldn't say that I was phobic of needles. Though I do will tell you one of the reasons why I never touched needles was when I was out there, I remember having run into this addict who was sitting in the bathroom and he was shooting up in downtown. And the guy looked up at me with the needle in his hand, shooting up, and he said, and that for some reason I can remember this as clear as day, is don't ever try this. And proceeded to do what he was doing. And I was just absolutely flabbergasted that he was doing that. And I never did it. Which should tell me that I knew a lot about taking direction, which I did, took that edict as gospel for some weird reason, but any given rate. Yeah, I went to the mothership program at AA for first 18 months of my recovery because they had three meetings a day, every day. I wasn't working. I was scared shitless of a lot of things, one of them coming out of the closet because there wasn't too many people of color that was gay that I knew. And they basically, it was a room full of people who were had cross and I put in air quotes cross addictions in AA parlance. But basically they were addicts that drank, basically is what it boiled down to. And I went to that meeting very regularly. I became such a an annoying individual there. I just so I did service every which way I possibly could, and they allowed, and for some reason they allowed me to. And and I basically at that time, and this is so cliche, it almost seems funny now, but one of my main things I had to do in that meeting was empty the ashtrays. And because it was a smoking meeting, this was when you could smoke in meetings at that time, which I think is really, which just tells you how long ago that was. And I still to this very day felt that and being a coffee maker, and that was my introduction to service. And there was a couple of people in that meeting who also went to Narcotics Anonymous. And one of the people that actually was going to that meeting got me into service in Narcotics Anonymous meeting, and she convinced the group to make me the merchandise chair for the American River Unity Day. And I asked her, what does a merchandise chair do? And I didn't know anything about service at that level. She said, don't worry about it, we'll figure it out. And basically that's how I became a chair of merchandise at a convention level. But at that time, I didn't go to a lot of NA meetings. And so I thought it was kind of weird that a guy who's going to primarily AA meetings was doing service in NA and not gone to a lot of NA meetings. And luckily, as it were, there was an NA meeting right that just opened up at this recovery facility, and I had no idea what I had in store for me. And I was welcomed at that meeting. I had 2 or 3 years clean, and I was welcomed at that meeting, and I felt like, wow, this is a great place. These people are fantastic, and I could relate to them. And those those addicts in that meeting didn't care if I what my drug of choice was. They didn't care I was gay. They didn't care I was black. All they cared about was the fact that I had a drug problem. And actually, at the time, it was a novelty to see someone of color at NA meetings. It was a novelty seeing someone who's gay at NA meetings. Now there's tons and tons of gay, lesbian, bisexual, whatever meetings going on. And the interesting thing was the acceptance I got there was immediate, but I didn't feel it until months and months later after I started going to those meetings. And that particular meeting, I made that my home group in Sacramento, which they later, we had to move. I became such I did service at that meeting as well. And that meeting pretty much held me together when I got a job and when I lost a job. And it also held me together when my father died, when I had 5 years clean. And there were loads of people at that meeting that helped me get on with the business of recovery. And one of those people became one of my closest friends in recovery. And she was married to the guy who later became my sponsor. And I jokingly call him a little redneck, because that's what he called himself. And he didn't care if I was, you know, he didn't care I was gay. Only thing he cared about was the fact that I had wanted to stay clean. And interestingly enough, he was the one of the few people who actually, when I was offered a chance to move to San Francisco at the time, he told me, go. But I'm going to leave you something, and that is page 69. And I don't have my basic text with me, so I could tell you what that said on there. But that basic text, but on page 16, no, 96, excuse me. Forgive me. Oh, Freudian slip. It's showing. But on that page, a second paragraph, and page 96, it says, we come to know ourselves, to love, to be loved, to know ourselves, to care and care for others. And it went on to say, sometime in our recovery, we will deal with things such as death of a loved one, loss of a job, loss of place to live. These are realities of life for us, and they don't stop happening because we get clean. Even after sometimes in recovery, we can't find ourselves jobless, homeless, and penniless. We thought that the recovery was not paying off. And one thing must matter. One thing must stand clear. We must not use no matter what. So he left me with that. And it's one of my absolute, I wish I could say it verbatim, but I have to take a look at it. But it's absolutely my favorite passage in the whole basic text. Because it said everything I needed to hear and know full well what to expect with my recovery. And sure enough, all that stuff happened to me in recovery. And I didn't have to pick up. I lost a relationship in recovery and I didn't have to pick up. I lost a job in recovery, a couple of jobs in recovery, and I didn't have to pick up. I didn't have to pick up when I had to make a move out of an apartment to another place. I didn't have to pick up. I didn't have to pick up when my best friends in recovery had a baby and he put him in my arms and I didn't have to pick up. And that made me really, really nervous. It's still one of my great phobias is holding a newborn baby. It's stuff like that that's helped me stay clean, going through all those things in my life. You know, when I moved to San Francisco, that was for me the biggest move I ever made in my life. When I, you know, I there were times in my recovery, And I say the my recovery where I absolutely had no recovery. And so what I mean by that was I was acting as if I was on drugs. And the only thing is I was clean and crazy and just clean but crazy as all fuck. And luckily I had made these connections in recovery that told me, it's okay, Michael, we can help you. And you know, some of those people are still in my life today. And I just found out that one of those people who was a big part of my recovery in Sacramento, who moved to San Francisco as well at one point, just celebrated 32 years in recovery. And I've seen her go through a lot of stuff. And we got through a lot of stuff together. And we neither one of us had to pick up. And one of the great news about that was it gave us a lot more strength to go on with to learn the lessons we learn. If nothing else that I've gotten here in these rooms is lessons. And learning how to surrender, which is pretty much what the reading is all about, is about surrendering. Like, fucking God, do I have to surrender again? And you know what? Surrender is a big part of my recovery, big part of all of our recoveries here, because every day is a new surrender. And some surrenders are easier than others, you know, because I don't know about you, but there's a lot of times when, you know, there's this that annoying chalkboard nail on the chalkboard sound that comes with it. And sure enough, what that is my inability to surrender right then and there. But you know, that's what my surrender sounds like and looks like. Most of the time, it's nails on a chalkboard. But you know what? Once I do surrender, it's a great relief to surrender. And, you know, one of my big surrenders was to move to the UK because I had no idea how to do this. I've never, you know, I was very happy when I first moved to got clean in Sacramento, and I said to myself, if I die here clean, I will be very happy. I moved to San Francisco, and I said the exact same thing. If I died here in San Francisco clean, I'd be very happy. And I met somebody who lived across the pond, aka in Scotland, and had no idea where in the hell Scotland, you know, I only, in romantic terms, had ideas what Scotland was like. I had no physical experience with it whatsoever until I met this man. And through the process of the experience of others, they said, why didn't you just go see him again? See if it was worth your time. It was just a summer fling. It wasn't summer at the time that I saw him, but that was a thing. So that, you know, I met him in February, and that April I was actually in 2006, I actually came over here for my second date. And lo and behold, we started to see each other across the pond, and then I had to make the big decision, make the big surrender of whether or not I was going to move over here. And one of the things that about that was I was dripping. I was facing the unknown, because what would happen to me? How am I going to be received in the Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous here in Edinburgh? And somebody here in Edinburgh says, you know what, you'll never know until you do it. And, you know, it may have been self-will that may have made me come move over here, but that's basically why I did it. And the great news is I'm still sticking around 13 years. And 13 years later, I'm still here. I didn't run away. I just had varying degrees of letting go of whatever it was that I thought was holding me back. And you know what was holding me back was me. You know, and this higher power, and I'm just talking about this for a quick second because I'm not a big fan of God or anything like that, but if there was a higher power, it was giving me all my lessons given to me right in front of me. It wasn't, I didn't have to try to figure out how to, you know, what I should do, how to navigate this. And I was like, please give me a sign that you exist or anything like that. Basically, all my answers were right in front of me. It was just my self-will that just allowed me to not see them. I wanted that specific answer to those specific issues. And you know what? The answers were right there. All I had to do was let go of my ego for 5 seconds, and then the answers came. So I came back to Narcotics. And you know what? Narcotics Anonymous has always been there since I've been clean. The Fellowship of Narcotics Anonymous always been there since I've been clean. And some of the people who I got clean with, some of the people I saw get clean, some of the people that supported me in my decision, you know, supported me in my, you know, supported me, are still supporting me in my clean time. And then, you know what, I tried to do my best to support them as well. And the most important thing that they gave me, what the steps have given me, what this fellowship has given me, what the program's given me, is a person that I never met before. Somebody who is, you know, that has the capacity to be kind and generous, but also can be as stubborn as a mule and can be a complete bastard at times. And that is me. And for the most part, I like me. I've learned to accept me. I've learned that If you accept you, you have at least one person in your life accepting you for you, with all your flaws and insecurities and your, you know, your craziness and your stuff, you know. All I had to do was take a risk, and the payoff was so beneficial, you know. And it's funny too, because there probably one of my sponsees is in this meeting tonight, and I took a risk in trying to help them. And because I'll be honest with you, I was scared. You know, even though I used to jokingly said that I drew the short straw, what it really was very frightened to sponsor this person, because they were exactly the opposite of me. And I thought, you know, what is this you know, what can I give this person? The answer is, don't worry about what this person can give to you, what you can give this person. Wonder what they give you. And you know what? They gave me this sense of boldness, and their integrity is completely intact. And, you know, one of the things was, I didn't do anything except just introduce them to themselves, because that's what this program has given me, is an introduction to Michael. And my close, you know, and since I've been here, and, you know, one of the jokes I always, as people ask me, why did you move to Edinburgh, Scotland? And I would point, because Europe was over there, having never been to Europe outside, you know, the only time I've ever been to any place in Europe outside of UK is when I had to fly into Paris to fly here, or go to Ireland to fly over here, but never set foot in the city proper to see what the city was like. And, you know, this program gave me an opportunity to see different cities. And, you know, and the other thing that I got from this is to surrender my fear of what people will think of me, as if I can give a shit now. But I went to a couple of conventions in the Adriatic, which is a place I never even heard of. I went to my very first European convention was in Podgorica, Montenegro. And if you asked me where Montenegro was, I couldn't tell you where, you know, much less where Podgorica was. And here I was, this tall, skinny gay man and black gay man coming into this country. I remember going to the airport, and this woman asked me, why are you here? Because I told her, and I told her the truth, I came for a convention. She just was so furious that I would just want to come to their country. But you know what? All I got was acceptance, and all I got was love. All I got was welcome. And it taught me something very valuable about this program more than anything else. And that is, no matter if you take your program with you, the program will be there for you. And that was a gift that I didn't know I was given from Narcotics Anonymous. I was given me. I was given, and I'm not saying that in a narcissistic way. I'm saying that because for years I didn't, you know, the reason why I used drugs and alcohol so much was because I was trying to find self-acceptance and acceptance from others. And when I got the acceptance from others, it just wasn't enough and it wasn't good enough. And today I realize that I am good enough just the way I am. I could be better. I can be a little bit better. I can improve. But basically, I know for a fact I'm really okay with me. I can look myself in the mirror and see, you know, all the gray hairs and accept that gray hair and see my fat little belly from COVID belly and be accepting of that, because this program taught me how to have that self-acceptance through the step work that I've done on myself, for myself, and with the help of the sponsors I did have. And this program's greatest gift I've ever received in my recovery is you guys. I can't, when I come to an online meeting or go to a face-to-face meeting, I see fellow addicts. I see people who everyone said didn't have a chance in fucking hell to make it through this program, make it through this program. I've been honored and privileged to meet some of you guys along the way and know full well that you've done things that quite astound you. And I had and I was present for the presence of you getting there, because I know that's what happened to me. And you know, and there were addicts there for me when my mother died. There were addicts there when I made that move to the UK. There were addicts there who, helped me get my first job. And there were addicts there who kept me going to do my craft. And all I can say is thank you. And I thank you all for that. And one other thing too, and you know, in the Serenity Prayer, it starts off, HP grant us the serenity, HP the grant us the courage, and HP grant us the wisdom to know the difference. And you know, a grant is an undeserved gift, and I've been granted so many opportunities that I didn't deserve through the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I'm grateful for that. You know, 35 years clean, I'll be 61 in the next few months. And even I find that quite unbelievable when I think about it. When I was in my disease, I was thinking I was never going to see 30 years of age if I'm lucky. And if I live through this, I probably won't see 31. And now I'm double that. And I'm very happy that, you know, I've learned to accept the fact that age is just a number. And, you know, recovery, you know, and just to let you guys know, it's not a number, it's an experience. Because all those cumulative days gave me the experience to be blessed and be here with you all today. And I cannot thank you guys enough. There are too many people. There are thousands of people in Narcotics Anonymous. I thank each and every, one of them for their candor and their wisdom, because that's where I get most of my recovery from learning from you guys how to recover one day at a time. And, you know, some of my own effort as well. I won't discount myself that much. But I will say that a lot of my recovery came from learning from you guys. And the wisdom I know is the wisdom that the difference of the wisdom I know comes from what I've learned from the rooms of NA, whether it be online or face to face, whether it be in Edinburgh or San Francisco or Sacramento or Podgorica or Sarajevo or Berlin or, strangely enough, Oslo, Norway. I've gotten so much from this program. And I, as Tina Turner once said in when she was doing her comeback, she said, you know, I'm just getting started. So with that, I'm going to leave it there. Thank you so very much for this opportunity. And thank you guys for the, for your gift of your experience. And I'll leave it there.